Here is Northern Community Radio's totally beat hip program director, Heidi Holton, with an important message or two.
You are listening to the Beat Cafe 3 on 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 in Brainerd, and 103.9 in Ely. Online at kexe.org, we are authentic local radio in northern Minnesota.
Rail River Folk School. Is this a great place or what? We're going to start passing the hat now. Well, actually, it's a minnow bucket. And please, when it gets to you, be generous. And if you're not in the building, write this down, railriverfolkschool.org. Go there, donate, feel better, and everything that winds up in the bucket goes directly to Rail River. Hopefully, whatever you're going to be putting in the bucket won't make much noise, if you know what I mean. Rail River Folk School has so many irons in the fire, there isn't time in this show to do anything more than hint at what they're up to. Rail River is a sustainable living campus featuring Sustainable Tuesdays with the Indigenous Environmental Network and Bemidji State University. They've got the lowest pair here in concert on April 25th. I think you can get tickets starting tonight, maybe. They're running all sorts of other programming, learning gardens and shared available studio and office space. You feel the vibe the minute you walk in the door here. Again, thank you and congratulations for everything you're making happen at Rail River to Jessica and Saul Saucedo, Rochelle Rocky Carpenter, and everyone else involved with the Rail River Folk School. This is the kind of place that will change the world. And just a reminder, as part of Bemidji's First Friday, the featured artists here in the Vagrant Bookstore Gallery are Simon Zorns and Tim Stone. And you should know, too, that Rail River's First Friday Folk Collective, which would on other First Fridays be happening right now, gave us these 2 hours tonight, and the Folk Collective will take to the stage as soon as the Beat Cafe is off stage. Stick around. Welcome back, Sean Hill.
Okay, I'm going to read some poems sort of not about Bemidji. This one's about my particular fears, I guess, the homes of that fear can create in a way. When you're young, the strange things that fear does to one. Or something like that. Spring 1986. Tent caterpillars crawl in the crotch of an apple tree. I'm sure I can hear the small tug of their knitting, an old necessity. Their silken nest grows. This tree reminds me more of Sir Isaac Newton, a man of keen observational skills, than Adam and Eve and their tree. It's spring, and I walk home from middle school alone. The caterpillars teem. They move like streptococci and other cultures jostling in petri dishes in the decades-old hygiene film from health class, cast on the white screen that shimmers reflected light, blinding us in the dark just after the pictures stop. It's spring, and we'd rather be outside, but there's another film outlining the array of rashes and blisters, burns and stings of venereal diseases, with exotic names like chlamydia, syphilis, and herpes. like Scylla and Charybdis, and the pantheon that belongs in English class, with fire burn and cauldron bubble, and something wicked this way comes. I'm 13, and I found trescodicophobia in the dictionary at home the other day. And my new fear gathers with the old. VD joins the boogeyman and nuclear annihilation. There are no films for the new disease. Four words condensed to four letters. A monosyllabic whisper this spring. So, as we've established, I am from Georgia, from the South, and I until 1999, had never gone west of Birmingham, Alabama. That's why I took a road trip to California, and that was an adventure. There's a poem about that trip. Vacation. I crossed the Mississippi for the first time early our second morning out, driving slow, and after 5 days of driving and visiting, driving and car troubles, driving and myriad signs inviting, come see the world's largest Indian reservation. Green petrified wood, next white. Live albino cave buffalo. Free 72-ounce steak. There's always a catch. Driving and car troubles. Driving and driving west. Driving and not to the ocean yet. I can't sleep in Albuquerque. Yesterday, I realized the land between here and Santa Rosa, where we lost the transmission and a day, is too bare and flat. The horizon's not cluttered or broken, brought closer by trees or anything. I wasn't meant to see that far. My mother and father, brother, grandmothers and aunts, everything excised. I can't feel it anymore. Distance grows in the bones. Tonight, I feel the room spinning like after a bender, but I've been sober since Georgia. I can't feel the world. It wobbles under this bed, off balance, because Georgia's gone to oblivion. Duende. Tonight, you walk your mother up the dune to see the stars and down to the beach to meet the ocean. I wade into your desire to warn you that the dark of your mother's night is darker than your dark, as your dark is darker than mine. Today, the surf report cautions, don't turn your back on the ocean. The dark, an ocean for us all. Even in this small beach town, at night, constant wave and traffic din vie for the field of imagination adjacent to the cul-de-sac at the end of the curve of my ear, where in this election year, political speeches seek to build a home of promises. Heroes and gods vied in the myths of dimmer times over women, horses, trade routes, and crowns. Sundry trophies and bragging rights, the ageless pursuit of happiness. I turn from words to you to find the dark sounds in the world because, to be frank, as an ocean, surface and secrets, or as candid as a sea, more than any politician will ever be, we'll all eventually meet our due end. Yesterday, I stood in your brother's hobby orchard and watched as he worked to to repair the irrigation system. Guessing where the water pipes were, he laughed, suggesting we ask his neighbor with the divining rods, and reported talent for finding water to trace where we needed to unearth. And that reminded me of the young tourist couple, surely from some flyover state, I saw years ago at Ground Zero, posing in front of the cross, part of the rubble, scrap metal, salvaged from what was taken away. Briefly trying to figure out the right expression for the camera, before diving into a smile, the one that we see at scenic overlooks, monuments, and the beach. My grandmother shows up in this poem. She was a school teacher. She was a science teacher. She was my fifth grade science teacher. Above it all, at 33,000 feet above sea level, the elbow of the man in front of me, who is as dark as my younger brother, good chocolate, bittersweet dark, rises above the blue headrest like the Rock of Gibraltar in negative, black and alive and trying to get comfortable. I'm almost as surprised by my desire to touch it as when I returned home so long gone and my brother's 25-year-old body startled me, grown, lounging in his boxers, nonchalant in his skin, still living in that house. I didn't recognize him since I hadn't watched him the way I watched the ground. Always a window seat, so I can see how far we'll fall out this window. The middle of the country, a quilt pieced from generations of scraps folded in a chest at the foot of a farmhouse bed, looks nothing like the coast, with their tightly packed subdivisions, with kidney pools and cul-de-sacs, looking like the map of the lungs Nana taught me when I was 10. Bronchioles and alveoli. And near the end, I didn't know how to read the x-rays of her pancreas from the Greek words for all and flesh. I imagined tumors as smooth as the moon from where I sit, pearls with their grain of sand hearts, and out the other side, dragged across the horizon, the color under God's fingernails, a blush among the clouds, the wine and bread of the body and blood, or the finger that gives life, brushed by Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel, the creation of Adam, and I wonder how I am made. Postcard to Regret, another one of those weird postcards. Oh, Postcard to Regret. I visited a friend and found I'd offended her in some way I need not bother you with, save to say, in this case, it was not the offense or my being remiss, but the sting that she felt that brought you immediately to mind. Remember that time I asked you, who are your people, as we do in the South? And you said, desire is my cousin. I am her opposite. My people are many, those who wish now could be different. And any friend of chagrin is a friend of mine. That's why I think of you as the egress of the past I just had. The entrance of consequence, the present fallen on the wrong side of choice or chance from where I stand whenever I address you. Like the egret's lament when it misses the cricket. If egrets were given to bewail missed tidbits, as I would and do, my losses, mistakes, and missed opportunities.
Thank you, Sean, and he will be back. Brian Laidlaw is a poet, musician, as you've noticed, and educator from San Francisco. He studied creative writing at Stanford and earned an MFA in poetry at the University of Minnesota. He teaches songwriting now at McNally Smith College of Music in St. Paul. Here's Brian Laidlaw.
Thanks. I'm going to read a handful of poems first from a book of mine that's coming out actually just next week with Milkweed Editions. And it's sort of a North Country book. It's inspired both by the town of Hibbing and by Bob Dylan's upbringing there. And it's both about Bob Dylan, and then it's also about Echo and Narcissus, and Bob Dylan is my Narcissus. So this begins with a poem called Narcissus the Debutante. Newcomer grows in, killing familiarity. The wealthy scramble to incorporate. He attends their dinners. Like demons, they need new bodies. Downlooker comes to town, comes to their parties. They think him shy. No, he knows there's no such thing as eye contact. The wolf has a horizontal sweet spot on its retina for spotting prey on the prairie. The stranger has a narcissus-shaped sweet spot, all the better to spot himself. Here is his typewriter retina. He swaggers from ocular to oracular. To alienate everyone comprehensively, encyclopedically, is to become, in essence, alien. It's called altitude sickness. Some days I believe the idiots and impingers of me are gradually getting smarter. The pine cone slowly unfolds, is edible to squirrels but not humans. The pine cone flowers like a rose and is beautiful, but not the way a rose is. Statuesque, picturesque, I will myself to pan in, to want close-ups, to understand a path the way the ant does, on knee pads and underneath objects 10 times my weight. Today I don't wish I were in outer space where a torn glove means evacuation into a void, tonguing the peaceful regulator. Today the dummies ripple around me. I am part of the collective idiocy, the anthill, a commons and a summons. I don't know what everybody does all day, what suits and amalgams, but neither does anybody. This next poem is called Notes for a Song Called The Drift. The cottonwoods continue to impregnate one another, meaning I miss the drift of snow across a prairie, meaning I miss the drift of kissing you across the plains, meaning I miss the drift of not ever kissing you at all. My stargazer friend thinks the stars are far apart because they wanted to get away from us. I don't blame them. Actually, of course I do. All we need is a statuesque look and the patience to breach the breach between now and the day the radio breaks open for its tribute to you, to truth, and to yours truly. This is called Pastimes. There are people who identify trucks on the highway by engine sounds, regional birds by bird songs. They never catch the trucks, they never catch the birds. I am skilled in a different useless skill. The reflection running through my house has my own body, but I don't find him overly shadowy. Some days I think I am deaf and just know a lot about hearing. Some days I could catch him if I want, but I don't want. And this next one is called Terrarium Letter Number 8. And the book has a series of letters in it that are sort of inspired by Bob Dylan's crazy book, Tarantula. Has anyone read that book? It's a great book. It's very bizarre. So this is drawn from that. That's part of why it's so bizarre. Terrarium Letter Number 8. And then died is a good way to cut a thematic loss or stop embarrassment from happening. I think I was loving ponies, gray, in the dream. Love isn't always explicit, but this time it was. Multiform, multicolored. I remember dreams as though they are manes clipped from my neck. I was riding a bareness or a barrenness. We threw out the wicker chairs because they resembled collapsed houses, or worse, functional houses for collapsed apocryphal straw men. Everyone in dreams is tired of dreams, aren't they? My arms get so energetic, they desert me. I misbehave like a saddle. That book I read in dreams, it had crap alliteration. Love me, I commanded, and then died. Have you seen your era recently? The news has a face like a bird, symbolic, symbiotic. Dirt is more alive than a city, but you can't hardly eat either. Madmen construct cinder, blocks, bad mana, and then died. Even in death, I am multitasking, to paraphrase Whitman. The dream had the word mimic in it, like a meme or a mime. Yes, I'm not illiterate in dreams. I like to collapse into a poem, a bad chair. In everyone's life, the liver is the protagonist, and then died. I slept so hard, I didn't even know I was alive. You tagged yourself, and then I tagged myself. And then the book reverses from a book to a stack of pages, to a stack of horse meat. Everyone is complicit. To a stack of trees, to a forest. That's how love works, and then continues working. And in addition to this Bob Dylan book, I also recently put out a record slash chapbook about Bonnie and Clyde. I played a couple of the songs from that before. And so I'm just going to wrap up with two poems from the Bonnie and Clyde chapbook. This first one is called Drive Shaft. Got a night shift off and a chiffon shift on. Everybody's bodies are signage. Consorts along no midway, amid no barkers, amid no smokers, amid Jane the bearded human, a Ferris, a neon ring around rosary, pocket full of hosiery, tethering the heather bed to the heavens. You in the middle, fouling with squirt guns and winning stuffed wolves. Let's go steady, steady as big kids. I don't care to rue this day or any more. When God's on holiday, he is unbelievable at pinball. Try touching your tongue to your nose, your elbow to your ear. That's what love is like. And death's somebody suddenly saying suddenly. If only the arcade ran on wafers. If only heaven were that cushy velvet light. Revelers in lockstep with floods of a trinity of the free play and replay and the reincarnation called a one-up. And then this last one is called Clyde Barrow, Not Pictured. You made it into the newsreel, didn't we, sweets? The millions saw your dead leg like a Grecian urn, unfairly fair in the ashen, whitened black back seat. You know okay bands will sing songs about us. A cloth over the blood is spread. Yes, let's talk about a letdown. Monster, death is like a rainfall in reverse. We slid into the mullins and laid my arsenal out. Was I ever dapper? Were we ever? Kids will be us for Halloween. Like a rainfall wafting up upon the upholstery, as if I had been waiting. Constables showered me once, dozens, so much so we can't distinguish our gunk anymore. Primetime coroners with clipboards sort of us. Sweets, it was like a whole autumn in reverse, almost as sweet as springtime's red recursion, the cloy of blood meal, a whole fall in reverse, a releafing, or else a whole springtime moving forward with your shots at the end of it. One moving regular with you posed at the end of it. Thanks.
Brian Laidlaw. Gina Marie Bernard grew up in northern Minnesota and teaches high school English in Bemidji. She credits her mother and grandmother with teaching her all the important lessons that she's still following up on and exploring in her poetry. Gina Marie Bernard.
Thank you. I'd just like to say I'm very honored to be here among such talented and distinguished poets and musicians. My opening poem first appeared in Cimarron Review. It's called Found. Faith is something I hold in the reliquary of my mouth, rolling it with my tongue, mindful of its potsherd frailty, certain instead of concrete memories of the bear, vivid despite the space of years nested away like field mice within the ossature of time, or rather, what was a bear but now hung flensed and naked beneath the pale cotton eye of an autumn sun in my 12th year, its body slung from a pine, braided rope pulling against the gambrel with the sound of nails wrenched from gray timber, its forelegs outstretched so much like a man, flayed head thrown back in howling outrage, the freeze of a fevered dream, marbled muscle drying, revolving against a legion of salacious rumors, one of which coupled it forever to the hunter through a rifled boar. Or perhaps the bear was an anchorite imploring intercession at the nave of that ruinous church, which was not a church, but Grandpa's resort, where a crowd of sportsmen in checked wool passed whiskey from a common bottle and joked about the bear's genitals, which lay pale with dust beneath its body, while high above, clouds scudded past like miasmas of chalk smeared from a board, and as I recall, the air was heavy with acorn mast, and deep into that moonless night, I awoke from visions of papier-mâché skulls and something animal inside me ripped loose, a broken suture left to darn my derelict trust. My next poem first appeared in the mountaineering magazine Appalachia. It's called Natural Science, Eastern Timberwolf. Place is best expressed in the semantics of season, as when storms mound forest, blanket forest, translate agate evergreen to sudden silent white. Months where even the certain thrum of Ely's dark waters lie hushed. Here, the wolf wagers her punishing, breathless life against deep drifts, the crystal void surrounding her, guiding her pack in pursuit, lifting hoarfrost muzzle to aurora borealis, shrouded breath concealing amber eyes, immense paws so like snowshoes, shadowing troubled deer whose sapling limbs punch through yawning snow. Hunger, clenched by complaining ribs, conducts her hunt as sure as ravens, ellipses in the paper white, charting death from far above. And my final poem is forthcoming in the Tool Review. It's called The Moose, Alces, Alces. Animal theme tonight. Morning light, citrine, silted through pools of smooth serenity. Here, the moose lifts its anvil head. Water cascades angry from this asymmetry, palmated antlers branching to the sky. Eyes mirror early broom and the thunderheads of jettisoned breath. Stepping, legs as black and hale as furs, vortices of bistered loam swirl lazily behind, singular orbits filigreed with grounds drifting in the lee of forward intent. Great sheaths of muscle moil beneath sorrel hide, each stride coupling prodigious grace and Antean might. And then, as if in defiance of its enormity, this towering certainty, the bull mounts shoreline timber and dissolves, soundless as dawn's amber evanescence. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina. Robert Jevney lives, works, farms, and occasionally writes in the greater Jacobson area, and you've probably heard his voice in various unattributed radio theater roles on KAXE, KBXE, Robert Jevney.
Early on, Early on, I said to myself, I said, Robert, you're a poet at heart, which hasn't necessarily made me a poet, but it has made me worthless for anything else. Holdover. I'm just a holdover from the Gilded Age of poetry, a flivver driver and a flabbergaster, mutton-chopped and broken-tusked, begrudging people their enthusiasms and their costumes, my own tyranny being just one more habit in need of control. But what am I to do, me, of all people, given to disproportionate thrust and caved in like Berriman to the idea that all must be in verse of a sort, as if that could make a difference? It seemed so perverse in an age teeming in perversity, and poetry being a stranger brew than most care for, a different kind of reduction than that practiced daily in coming to know it all. Still, one wonders where it could lead, back the word-drunk Berryman who tossed poor Henry from the bridge, when my goal, really, is to be less depressing when everything else is, however that comes about. I mean, what else is a mutton-chopped flivver driver to do once he is done shaking his fist at the world and no longer has the means to give away, knowing there is no torture quite like being too full of love, too late? Palomino in nine parts, all tamed sugary breath and sugary inflection, all told breathing sugary depth, told all left sugar plantations, regretting of nothing regrets. Personable. A person should never use this word in a serious sentence, or boulevard, much less in a song. Tankless water heaters supply limitless hot water at a savings. Who could ask for more? With more regard for the fullness of the parse than in parsing fullness or otherwise running like all hell. Pretend with me, send me another continence. Defend me, I swear I wrote sentence. Wasting breath, weak breathing waste, showering starborn matter in triumphal wumps to the scorched earth's sugary flesh, tamed death and fertilizer breath, conked, conched, conned, couched, passed, repassed. The political season. Oh, the temptation to let go. Oh, the fingers which could be pointed, the shame heaped upon shame, the recriminations, the epithets, and the blame. Oh, the blame, a river of blame, so wide and profound, so deep and deeply misguided in its bank-spilling search for the truth, the pressure of it mounting behind the dams and the meager levees, built with the confidence of the weary, but eroded by the incessant torrent of blame, aching to let go, set to a ticking clock, waiting for a day on the calendar decided by politicians and budgets, not by the sun, when we inexorably tilt towards darkness and the spillways spill and fields and farms flood and grandparents go up on their roofs to watch the cattle float by and whole towns are swallowed up, torn loose and tangled in the trestles downstream in the detritus of our dreams, awash in my blame, my magnificent, arrogant, calamitous blame. And when those waters recede, and they will recede, I would stand before you like a spurned, angry parent with hands on hips, knee-deep in the muck, wailing to the skies above. See what you made me do. After all I've done for you, who's going to clean this mess up? Which is why I won't let go. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy me another tube of chapstick and put it on the nightstand next to my bed. That's what I'm going to do. It is what it is. If I did not fear even more that there will be no future archaeologists, no one to stand witness and be champion of the times I inextricably, if not apologetically, find myself to be a part of, I would fear that future archaeologists will dig up my stuff, scan the moldering pile of gewgaws and insensible papers with some sort of widget, shrug their collective shoulders as if to say, so, and sloppily, through sheer disregard, mislabel the remains as neo-paleonic rubbish when we all know it's Napoleonic, damn it. Napoleonic.
Thank you, Robin. Kevin Zepper teaches at Minnesota State University, Moorhead, in the English department. If you're a regular at the Bemidji Public Library's Poetry Slams, you might well have heard him read and win at one or more of those events. Kevin Zepper.
This is called Ghostwriting, and I am dedicating this tonight to Sharon Harris. He hung blank sheets of paper on the refrigerator, his office door, the clothesline in the backyard, the silver snout of the bathtub faucet, then waited. When he looked closely at the paper, at the right angle, in the proper degree of moderate sunlight, he could see letters, glyphs, words, phrases, whole paragraphs written with some otherworldly spectral ink. The first ones appeared on computer paper he left on the clothesline. Outside, there were whirlwinds of words floating around, captured on the paper from the lone ghosts and free-floating ideas. He quickly wrote the words down, documenting the date and time of every discovery. He became a new kind of recorder, a reader of invisible words, a word whisperer. He papered up every inch of his house, even the aquarium and dog kennel. His office walls and windows were wallpapered with stray parchment, all in the hope of capturing words. Finally, he applied yellow sticky notes over every visible portion of his body and closed his eyes. Letter by letter, the words manifested themselves on every sticky note, words from one yellow square colliding with words from another. The creep of caterpillar alphabets crawl over his skin, each manifesting new wounds, new meaning. This is for Pat. Jude. I've washed my soul in Hey Jude after every funeral I've attended since my closest friend died. Consolation in the words of a majestic pop song strung in a spinning disc across the universe, ever revolving. Paul sings, make it better, and the music wells up in me like a spring of light and life in my eyes. The golden rolling loop of la da 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 repeating, joined with Abbey horns and strings, percussive piano, welcome notes breaking the leaden sorrel shackles on feet. Voices merge in this hymn and chorus as the melody regenerates, restoring notes to a seamless beginning. And the fade so gradual and grand, the slow procession of bright souls in the primal affirmations of yeah, 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 illuminating the space and shadowed valleys, leading me beside cool, calm waters, for there is no cold coda for the finality of things. Yes, yes, I was once lost cause, will find it in my heart and under my skin, the reaching of arms across, about, above, an exaltation of everything in the now and after, warm summers in the comfort of green pastures. Yes, I will make the pilgrimage, ghosts of my ancestors trailing in my even, humble, walking wake. I follow the rods and staffs of sound, recalling the sterile sting of mine enemies, how the shoulder's burden lightens, the rising sun shines in my heart, making it better. And this is from my math friends back in Moorhead, Minnesota, Howard and Carol and Mike. Infinitely pi. At first glance, it appears to move in one direction, 3.14159265358979, and on and on and on. Oh, the magic of dancing, measuring out the great circles and cycles, and on, forever in one direction. But I believe pi starts in the middle of a miracle. Like fireside stories or the birth of a child, pi resonating her numbers through the dark to a horizonless beginning. Imagine a spider silk of tight stardust thread reaching both ways across the universe, kind of like creation, and on and on.
Kevin. Teresa Evangeline spends her days on a little piece of land along the Pine River, experiencing the beauty of the natural world. Then, in her poetry, she distills these moments down into what's essential about them. Here's Teresa Evangeline.
Thank you. Yellow pears. She lived in an old black van at the edge of her grandmother's woods. Long black hair. Voice, the sound of damp earth. Chippewa. She gave us yellow pears, my sister and me. We sat quietly, legs dangling, juice dripping from our chins. I was 5 years old. The mitten box. From the comfort of the mitten box, behind the wood cook stove, I watch. The deer lying dead on the kitchen floor. The rest of the winter to go. Mapping dreams. In the fading light of the farmhouse, I map my dreams in an old atlas. Leave my mark, searching for home. Margins stained by fingertips. The library. In the southwest corner of the library, light falling through tall windows. I inhale the scent of old worlds. Nothing else will ever do. So many towns. So many towns. Lives I could live in. There's a little house on a back street in Bisbee, Arizona. Porch covered in wisteria. Maybe next time. In the sand hills. In the sand hills of Nebraska, black Angus munch on stubbled grass. I lean into the wind. Listen. Everything is fiction. Mules. Along a cold Nebraska highway, a water tank. Mules gather for their portrait. I snap. The windmill hums. Songs of a distant spring. Ruffed grouse. Two ruffed grouse lived in my meadow. All that's left, pieces of their wings. I kneel beside them. That's too many broken things. The ermine. Little ermine with black-tipped tail. Something has drawn blood from your beautiful white throat, left you lying on this path through the meadow. I lean into another loss, yearning for summer, spring already a lie. Rainbow Valley. A dead brother's leather jacket stolen from its hook, Zeke's Bar in Colorado. That tree in Rainbow Valley. The thing we can't let go. Plum trees. Then everything happened at once. Ghosts in the plum trees. Dead leaves on the steps. His name on the owl's tongue. The long ride home. Hat rack. Neatly stacked firewood in disarray. Just one more time, I'd love to hear my father say, use your head for something besides a hat rack. The ironing board. leaning into the ironing board and my yellow-flowered bell-bottoms. You sang, "Ruby, Ruby, when will you be mine?" Then, your brother died in Vietnam. You did some time. I married young. Our last back porch summer. Light. A bird flew against my window. Cradled in my palm, he opened his beak, drew his last breath. A small sound, like light gathering. The turtle shell. As leaves push against the screen door, my Lakota grandmother says, "Here, it's yours now." Hands me the world in a turtle shell. The only light. Standing at the fence line, snow falling, the only light, the neighbor's barn. We breathe as one, the dog and I, this deep blue night. The Big Dipper. From the corner of our farmhouse, my father navigates as I discover the Big Dipper. Nothing has been the same since.
Danny Klecko runs a bakery in St. Paul. Some of his poems are written while he bakes for Capital City. Before his spoken word career, Klecko was doing magic tricks, performing for friends and in clubs, taking some of his cues from his hero, Harry Houdini. His published 2014 book is titled Houdini in St. Paul. Danny Klecko.
Brethren, I bring you glad tidings from the capital city. You know, I came up here today to read poems to you, but it occurred to me it was the Holy Weekend. And I gotta tell you, I'm falling behind on the scorecard. So if you don't mind, I'm gonna ditch the poems and I'm gonna strive for atonement by reading to you two confessions. Number one. Trophies of conquest. Knowing how I dislike Garrison Keillor, without provocation, the pastry chef entered my office smirking because she received a secondhand invite to a gala taking place at his home, taking place that very night. Steal his salt and pepper shakers, I demanded. We'll put him in the break room. Now, my request offered no purpose, but the pastry chef called it genius, promising to fulfill my bidding. The following morning, during a post-mortem of the party, the pastry chef rolled bloodshot eyes while handing me a package with contents I am not at liberty to discuss. I'm a Polish kid. I only acknowledge popes born out of Warsaw. John Paul, cover your ears. Fantasy haunts me. From the bar stool to the church pew, a certain thought occupies my mind, a thought laden with sin. I want to kiss a Lutheran. Maybe it's not my fault. Maybe it's the neurotoxins that have seeped into the local water table, numbing my critical faculties. I'm guessing the Pope won't approve. Not to mention the Blessed Virgin, whose grave is probably spinning like a well-greased propeller. But when my love surfaces, I know she'll be adorned with braided pigtails, shoulder length, and a moderate level of temperance. And when I place my mouth on hers, our lips will slowly part, allowing me to taste the cardamom lingering faintly on her breath. I'm Danny Klecko. Pray for my soul.
Danny Klecko. Some of you will remember Mike Finley, last year's Beat Cafe's visiting guest poet. He's known to many, I just found this out, as Big Vanilla, and he describes himself as King of the St. Paul Poets. I just found that out, too. Here's my friend, Mike Finley.
Hi, how you doing? Great to see you. Why does the Buddha sit under the tree? To get to the other side. This poem requires that when I say an adjective, you say, how, was he? Can you do that? Did you hear? My dog won the Powerball. Boy, was he happy. He was about as happy as usual. Here's a Good Friday special. Say what I say. How?
How?
How good?
How good
of a guy?
How good of a guy was he?
He worried that the flesh-eating bacteria were not getting enough. I'm considering suing the judge who called all 34 of my current lawsuits frivolous. Aerosol tears for today's sad person on the go. I wrote some bumper stickers. I'm going to leave some time here for Sean. I break for green lights. My gun is my friend. My only friend. My sixth grader is nothing special. I heart my dog, and I think that makes me a great person. Honk if you're white. Think about that. Coexist, because I know where you live. And finally, I'm stupid, and I vote.
We're going to have Sean Hill come back and read one more poem.
This has been a really awesome evening. Really.
How do you end? I will end with a postcard. Postcard to my third crush today. I've been on the move. The bottoms of my shoes have rested on 48 states, 6 Canadian provinces, 7 countries, 3 continents, and the crush is constant. You look like someone's daughter. I find that so attractive. I once thought this, but now it's someone's mother or aunt more often than not, or cousin or uncle or brother or son on occasion. The crush is everywhere. Or maybe it's me, my luck, like always seeing the corner crooners by the storefront of the heart, loitering, singing for quarters and grins. Most days, I can count on the first and second crush, and sometimes there's a fifth or sixth. They're as likely not to notice me as smile in my eyes. Either way, my heart skips like those flat stones that kiss the skin of the pond and fly off again before sinking. Today, it's you in that polka dot dress. I need to thank for getting me to 3. The heart's a big chain, and there's one everywhere you go, and they rarely have those no loitering signs. You're more likely to see no solicitations. I'll leave this postcard here for you to find.
Sean Hill. Sean, it was great to have you here tonight, and I hope it happens again. We're going to have Brian Laidlaw and the Family Trade take us out here. How about a hand for Brian Laidlaw and the Family Trade? Well, that's it for the Beat Cafe 3, everybody. On Northern Community Radio, 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and 103.9 Ely. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support of Northern Community Radio. And a big thanks to Rail River Folk School for being such terrific hosts, and especially to our engineer of all things engineering, Dan Haug, and his huge staff of one, Chris Juleson. Not to mention our volunteers on hand tonight, Kathy Dodge, a.k.a. Dodger, Scott Hall's Monday morning sidekick, and Maria and Dave Kanee, and Julie Crabb, volunteer programmer and board member, and Sheila Holton, who rules the world as far as I can tell. And also to everyone on the staff, everyone else at Northern Community Radio,